Public radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org/protect.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. If you've noticed your grocery bill has drastically increased in the past couple of years, there may be a solution for you. Misfits Market, founded in 2018, is offering a grocery subscription with produce up to 30% off. But like everything, there's a catch. The produce might not look quite normal. The company's focus is to provide cheaper produce by selling what farmers would normally waste. We're learning more about how Misfits Market is minimizing farm food waste with the brand's marketing senior vice president, Holly Eagleson. Welcome to All Sides, Holly.
Thanks for having me.
So for our audience who have maybe never heard of Misfits Market, can you give us your elevator pitch? Tell me about the company.
Yeah, you got it. Misfits Market is an online grocery platform that offers a better way to shop for groceries that are curated for quality, nutrition, sustainability, and flavor instead of appearances. So by working with smaller farmers and emerging producers who are building a better, less wasteful food system, we can reduce food waste and make shopping for the sustainable, high-quality groceries easier and more affordable. And the big way we do that is by saving produce from lesser outcomes. We started as this mystery, ugly box of organic produce, fruits and veggies that were fresh and delicious but didn't meet the grocery store beauty standards. We delivered them straight to your door at great savings. We're able to pass along the savings to consumers because we can buy a little more cheaply this product that would have gone to waste, but still offer a really great return to farmers that put all the hard work in to grow that food. And we've since expanded to over 1,000 SKUs across all grocery categories you can think of, meat, seafood. A lot of it's still rescue, but all of it's super high quality, and it helps create a better food system by prioritizing really great food and nutrition and quality over these, you know, outdated beauty standards that started 60 years ago in stores.
Yeah, whenever you look up your company, you know, there's always a, you can see a picture of a really juicy but ugly looking tomato, and yes, you know by looking at it that that's probably a delicious tomato, but it is arguably ugly, right?
Totally. I mean, people who garden know that, like, not the best tasting stuff doesn't look like what you would expect, but it's natural, it's real. That's how kind of nature intended to grow. And so we're just doing what the taking that farmer's hard work and passing along to consumers so they know what real food tastes like. It's really a feature, not a bug, to look like this funny looking. And so we're trying to change these beauty standards and make sure more people have access to this great food.
Now, there's a quiz that you take when you first join, because it's subscription based. How does that work? What is it asking you?
Yeah, you just tell us your preferences. For example, how many people are in your household? What kind of foods do you like? You have dietary restrictions like vegetarian or, no dairy, things like that. We'll put together and curate this cart for you to start you off with what we think you'll like based on what's in season, what's rescued this week. Every week we get in a new batch of produce and other items that we've rescued and kind of curate this really great, delicious box for you. You can edit it anytime. You take out what you don't like, you put in more of what you do like, and then we automatically ship it to your door every week. In cities like Columbus, we have our first party delivery service that actually we take back your packaging every week as well. It makes it lower emissions delivery. And we try to be really intentional about every aspect of the food chain and how we deliver. And so it's a really seamless process. You kind of set it and forget it. And over time, you get to discover really cool stuff from, you know, farmers and brands that you wouldn't have heard of or had access to otherwise.
How active is Misfits Market here in Ohio? Do you know?
Yeah, we've got a really strong user base. We opened in 2019 in Ohio, and very intentionally, every time we expanded to a new place, we want to do the entire state, every zip code, because accessibility is really important to us. So I think, you know, Columbus, Cleveland are strongholds, but we do have, you know, in most zip codes in the U.S. And certainly in Ohio too, we deliver, which is really, you know, challenging when a lot of people live in food deserts or experience food apartheid and don't have access to a strong grocery store assortment within a mile of them. It's, you know, 1 in 7 people face food insecurity, but even beyond that, a lot of people just simply can't access this fresh food on a daily basis.
Do you have a partnership with any local farms in Ohio? Do you get misfit looking food from an Ohio farmer?
Yeah, great question. We don't at the moment. Part of that is because we aggregate the supply from a lot of farms across the US. We have four different distribution centers where it comes in, and then we ship out to all of, the kind of 60 markets, big markets, and then every other zip code across the US. We love to work with small farms, but sometimes just in service of getting reliable product and assortment to folks, we are not able to work with some of the smaller farmers, which is why it's really important for folks to know that when they have waste on the farm level, there's often nothing to do with it. They don't can't donate everything. There's a loss, or they simply can't aggregate the supply to do that. So it's even if we're not sourcing from Ohio farmers at the moment, I think it's really important that listeners understand the scale of this. It affects every farm, and there's something you can do about it by supporting, your local farmers, or at a national scale, supporting Misfits, and directly, impacting the people who are growing your food and feeling connected to that.
Your logistics operation must be massive, though, because
Yeah.
you have to move when it's fresh produce. You have to move it quickly. I mean, it doesn't last forever, right? So you have
Yeah.
to get it into the boxes and on people's porches as quickly as possible.
Yeah, we have a very sophisticated cold chain supply. In fact, we help other brands deliver perishable foods as well. So it's really perfected that. We acquired actually Imperfect Foods in 2022 that had a very robust operational system. So we're able to really we refine that kind of in a way that no other retailer has been able to across the country, to be able to get this to folks within days, and a lot of times a lot shorter than what you would see at a grocery store. We've shortened that supply chain essentially.
When did it start that grocery stores required their fruits and veggies to look perfect? Is
Yeah.
it always been like that? Or
No.
yeah.
If you think about kind of like the milkman model, folks used to have a lot of stuff delivered and it picked for them. But after World War II, grocery stores shifted to more of like the self-service supermarkets, where perfect looking produce became the selling tool. And so they, stores began rejecting items with cosmetic differences, even if it was fresh and delicious, because they wanted to create that shiny, uniform display of shiny apples. They all need to be the same size and shape to look uniform and entice shoppers. But just ask anyone with a garden, that's not how food grows, particularly when it's organic, which is, the bulk of what we deliver. So over time, consumers are trained to expect this, and it builds a very harmful cycle where they reject funny looking, too big, too small, misshapen food that's perfectly delicious, but it's really bad for the food system, bad for our farmers, and ultimately bad for the consumer, because you're paying more for this lesser quality product.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about food waste solutions with Holly Eagleson from Misfits Market. Now, according to your website, the company collects 500,000 pounds of food from farmers every week. How much of that is sold, in your boxes that go around?
Yeah, so about half of our produce, or a little over half of it, is rescued every single week, and that to the tune of, like you said, 500,000 pounds of food we rescue every week. It sort of depends on what you order. If you go to our website, you'll find the Save and Rescued aisle, which just makes it really easy to find what's brand new and rescued in our store. So you could buy all of that, put all of that in your kind of make a mystery box of your own, or you could shop all of our other kind of really high quality staples from brands you know and love and trust, and a lot of emerging and local brands that you might not have heard of. So it sort of depends on the user experience, what they're looking for. But that's true. It adds up, and we to the tune of a quarter of billion pounds of food over time that we've been able to rescue thanks to the partnerships with our farmers and our consumers that are choosing us and choosing to support a more sustainable food system.
Now, you also, when you have excess food, because you can't always get all of it out to someone, you donate it to food banks and aid organizations, such
That's
as
right.
Feeding America. So
Yeah.
how much do you usually end up donating?
Yeah, it sort of depends on what the weekly kind of shrink looks like, but we've got 60 partners across the US out of our four distribution centers that we benefit. So it's folks, a lot of actually, in fact, more marginalized communities that might not have the assistance of these larger organizations. We donate directly to them, even some kind of animal rescues. You'd be surprised, a lot of the kind of, wilted lettuce and stuff. Goats and pigs love that. So we're able to benefit kind of a range of folks around these communities. We do have the Feeding America, and in fact, as part of that partnership, we have a membership program where every order, if you pay our annual fee to save money on groceries, you get 25 cents is donated, and it helps benefit Feeding America. We deliver 2.5 meals for each order on that, and then we also support another organization that rescues food called Sharing Excess. They rescue food from the Hunts Point produce terminal in New York City, which is the largest in the world. A lot of it every day moves in and out, and they're able to rescue that and distribute it same day to New York City organizations. So, you know, we're always looking for new partners that we can help redistribute this food that would have gone to waste and make sure more people have access to this healthy product, whether it's our consumers themselves or folks across the country. We were able to do some LA fire relief help, and we're just always open to opportunities to help the communities and make sure we decrease food insecurity.
Now, is it all food that is a misfit, or is it sometimes the farmers produce too much food? Like, they have the perfect amount of rain and they end up with way more tomatoes than they expected. Do you sometimes get that, or is it always
Absolutely.
Misfit? Yeah.
It can definitely be excess. And in fact, part of what makes Misfits Market so special, our relationship with our growers, that we're there always for them. You know, grocery stores may have waning or, you know, fluctuating interest in specific SKUs, you know, like kale, for example, being so popular 10 years ago. If it's not popular anymore, you know, the farmers plant their crops well in advance. And if the grocery store doesn't want it at a certain time, you know, they're kind of stuck. So we're able to have this reliable outlet for them and to be able to accept them on an ongoing basis, even if it's not, you know, funny looking or kind of cosmetic differences. So we're able to consistently give our folks who are shopping our platform really great deals on that item if it's excess. We have some cool stuff. For example, we mystery SKUs right now. So we'll put together eggplant or alliums and kind of collect different SKUs all together, like a single type of a seasonal allium, red onions, white onions.
I don't know what an allium is. I'm sorry. I'm going to expose myself. Go ahead. What's an allium?
Are like garlic, onions, shallots, all those fantastic foods that help flavor your, you know, your meals. I'm a huge fan of them. But there's, you know, they grow different times during the year. They're spring garlic or garlic scapes, all those sort of things that may or may not have a grocery outlet that's going to take them on, but they have a different flavor profile and application at different times in the year. So our consumers are, you know, so excited to experiment in the kitchen and learn about new veggies and take this excess product and get it at a discount when we offer in this mystery bundle. And then the farmer benefits because they have some place to, you know, find a home for it. And we give them 20% off the consumer these quality veggies.
Now, I know your website says that you sell the produce at 30%, you know, less than the grocery store. But how do you convince people to go your route? Is it the idea that your customer is the person who wants to help food not be wasted? Is that the person you're looking for?
It is, but it's a pretty big tent. You know, I think everyone's looking for great food that meets their health goals, fits their budget, and then ideally, yeah, it does something kind of for the greater good, and it helps farmers. Everyone can kind of get behind the fact that, you know, farmers are the backbone of our food industry, and we want to see them succeed. So it's a pretty good story to sell, but you're right. Like, some folks don't know what a misfit means. So it includes a lot of education. A lot of our best ads are very much storytelling based about, for example, we had some brioche burger buns from Bakerly. They look fantastic. They look, you know, you want to sizzle your steak and put it, or your burger and put it right on there. But in fact, they were slightly misshapen, so a grocery store wouldn't take them. So it's, we tell the story of, like, this great food wouldn't have had a home. You can get it for less. Come shop with us and discover so much more, you know, in terms of great food, some of it rescued, but a lot of it not. And some of the examples are, some of our best-selling items are bacon ends and pieces from Nyman Ranch, a very well-known meat producer, but they can't find an outlet for those in grocery stores traditionally. So, you know, the sizzling little pieces are some of the best parts, but you wouldn't know that unless someone has told you and kind of educated you on this. So a lot of our marketing work truly is education. We had some ribeyes, in fact, that we were rescuing from a high quality meat supplier when a large national steakhouse ordered too many of them. So we put that piece of meat front and center and said, what's wrong with this? And it's really fun because people on Facebook kind of chime in and say nothing, like, it belongs on my plate and things like that. But it's very interactive, and we're able to show them that, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, but here's a story behind it. So storytelling brings them in. Then we have a lot of education about kind of what they can expect in terms of quality and freshness. We have a quality guarantee, in fact. So if something doesn't live up to our standards, well, you can easily refund your money in our app as opposed to taking something back to a store. And we try to, you know, we deliver on it every single week. We have a lot of QC to make sure we're delivering the very best product. But you're right, it is a little bit of a learning curve for a lot of folks who are used to these traditional grocery store messages and standards.
Now, in the next segment, we're going to be talking about food waste solutions and how to help farmers maybe not grow too much, or you know, just the idea of minimizing food waste. Yeah. Would that put you out of business if we figure it out?
No, it wouldn't, because there are so many challenges that the farmers are facing. You know, for example, increasingly due to climate change, you've got a lot of food that can't find a home because of how it's been impacted by extreme weather. So not only does food waste create climate change by, you know, methane release in landfills and all the inputs you're wasting by throwing that food away, but farmers have to deal with the fact that they're countering climate change. And we've taken things like hail damaged apples, greens that got too much sun, yellow dragon fruit that was overlooked by stores because it had a few tiny red spots due to high winds. That's only going to continue to happen. And also, we see, you know, only continuing food producers with a more of an eye on sustainability and how they can impact the food system with what they create, you know, regenerative agriculture practices, all that sort of thing. You can find at Misfits Market and brands that are making a social impact. So we still have plenty to do. There's so much room for everyone to participate in this. And in fact, reducing food waste is the most important thing that a consumer really can do to cut their impact on climate change. So we welcome everyone here. We'll find a way to make it work and make sure everyone can really understand that this food, you have to look beyond appearances to find this really great quality food.
That was Senior Vice President of Marketing for Misfits Market, Holly Eagleson. Thank you for joining us today, Holly.
Thank you.
And coming up, we are going to talk with a member of the Ohio EPA about food waste solutions. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jarovich. With 16% of food waste coming from farms and each household producing 474 pounds of waste a year, there needs to be more sustainable practices. As a part of the Ohio Food Scraps Recovery Initiative, the Ohio EPA has created a guide to finding outlets for excess food. But there's more to be done. We're speaking today with the lead of Organics Recycling and Environmental Planning at the Ohio EPA, Angel Arroyo Rodriguez. He's done research in specialized in food waste prevention and sustainable food systems. Welcome to All Sides.
Well, thank you.
So we know the national amount of food waste in farms, but is it similar on a local scale? What is food waste like in Ohio?
At the local level, measuring the amount of food that is being generated at farms, we do not have the data right now. That is something that we hope to collect in the next year or so, as part of our initiative and continuing our initiative. It is something very important that we need to know, because a lot of this food waste could be recovered and could be recovered for feeding people. And that's what we want to find out. Also, it depends a little bit of what kind of crops are growing in Ohio versus what is in other places. Those are factors. It's very different when you're growing crops such as soybeans, corn, that you might be able to cover more than when you're harvesting fruits like oranges or avocados or even apples and peaches. The amount of waste varies a little bit on the kind of crop.
Okay. And it's hard. I'm sure it varies because every year, every season's a new adventure. So it's probably hard to measure how much food is needed, how much food is wanted. It's kind of like trying to predict the future, right?
Absolutely. And sometimes some of the food that is wasted is the result of market changes. There might be times where the market demands less of the products or the fruits, so the farmers might harvest less of that. Sometimes also they may vary by weather. there might be unexpected weather that might damage some of the crops, and some of the harvesting might not be able to be done as well. And, you know, they recover what is more marketable, but there might be some fruits or some vegetable that, while they're still edible, might not meet some of the standards that are desired by the retailers. So those might be left behind.
Now, in the introduction, I mentioned the Food Scraps Recovery Initiative. How has that helped lessen the effects of food waste? Can you tell me what the Food Scraps Recovery Initiative is?
Yes, absolutely. That was an initiative that we started in Ohio EPA back in 2007-2008. At that time, I was in the composting program, and we had a few facilities in Ohio that were composting food waste, especially from some food producers. And you know, we knew that there was a lot more food waste generated in different stages of the food system, including from some farms. Some of these composting facilities sometimes do some excess or off-pecs materials from farms. But we did not have a lot of going on. We wanted to increase it. So here at Ohio EPA, we started to hold stakeholders meetings. We started to bring composting facilities, generators such as farmers, supermarkets, some restaurants, and also waste haulers, because removing this food waste requires different kind of equipment. And we started bringing them together to talk about what were the possibilities. We did those meetings for about 5 years. From there, emerged several projects. For example, from those meetings, that's when Kroger started to collect all the food scraps that were not able to be donated and start sending to composting facilities. Same thing with Giant Eagle and other retailers. We also have some restaurants also starting to do that. And one of the best things was that this eventually spread, and at some point Ohio EPA stopped holding these meetings because they started happening at the local level. Mm-hmm. We have in Cincinnati area the Green Umbrella, where they hold these meetings now by themselves. We had the Central Ohio Food Waste Initiative that has been coordinated by SWECO, and we have initiatives like that going now in Dayton, in Summit County, Akron, Cleveland, in those areas. So that was a great success for us that is happening. Now the next thing that we're doing, because this initiative at to that point has been managing food waste, it's already waste. Mm-hmm. But we want to move now how we do more for preventing the food waste in the first place, especially food that could be used and diverted for feeding humans or even feeding animals, if that's was more appropriate. So we're looking, in a sense, we're looking now more into the food rescue aspect of it. And in the past few years, another interesting development is that the Ohio Department of Health now had a food access specialist. So there's people that help work with food banks, with pantries, with food policy councils to help them access more food to be donated. Mm-hmm. So we very recently here in Ohio EPA, we partnered with the Department of Health, with that group, to look into how we can reduce food waste by increasing food access. So we're looking at it. The two state agencies are joining to see how we're going to look at it from both points of view.
It's interesting, the idea of changing the words from food waste to food rescue. It really does change the tone of the whole situation whenever you figured out how to deal with the waste with your composting program, but now let's rescue it before it needs to be compost, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, we want to, and you may see some places call it food waste versus wasted food. That's why we want to prevent the wasted food. Food that shouldn't have been wasted in the first place.
In our past segment, we spoke with someone from a company called Misfits Market, They take unwanted produce from farms and sell it at a cheaper price. And then later in the hour, we're going to hear from a food bank, which partners with farms and has food directly donated to them. Is the EPA working at all to help disperse extra produce? Are you trying to connect farmers to people like Misfits Markets or food banks?
That's what we hope to be doing with part of this initiative and collaboration with the Department of Health. We just started meeting and talking about this in mid-January. So we have already talked with a few of the food banks. You know, we have kind of informational meetings in EPA staff and ODA staff with some of these, some food banks, some food pantries, some transformation kitchens. These are groups that take some of the ingredients that might be too much, you know, my excess chicken that might be too much to distribute directly to people. And they work with chef and they create meals that then distribute those meals for free. That concept is increasing in Ohio. So also we're meeting with them to learn, to have advice from them on what is needed. Because another development is that here at Ohio EPA, we got a grant from USEPA to develop an organic materials management plan for the whole state. So as that, we're going to coordinate and be like, if you will, like a sub-plan for food rescue. And so can we kind of be working for the next year, developing that, working with a lot of the food banks, with anyone related or involved in food rescue to help us develop a plan for the whole of Ohio and how we're going to increase, how we're going to reduce wasted food and how we're going to increase diversion of that for human consumption.
This is All Sides. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about food waste solutions with Angel Arroyo Rodriguez. He is the lead for the Organics Recycling and Environmental Planning at the Ohio EPA. He's also done research on food waste prevention and sustainable food systems. Can you tell me more about sustainable food systems? Are farms the way we farm them right now sustainable? What's a sustainable food system?
In the context of food waste, or the context that I have studied, is part of recovering when we have the inevitable food waste, is recovering those nutrients, converting them to materials such as compost or organic fertilizers or some other way that we can then use those to nourish our soils, to have healthy soils, to return those nutrients. And that kind of helps cycle these materials in our agricultural soils. We also try to like solutions, also the sustainable parties that trying to do it more locally, make sure that, you know, you're producing a crop, and if you have waste from that crop, that you can use it in the same field, the same farm. This can also apply even at the level of community gardens and urban agriculture, trying to find ways that urban gardeners have access to healthy soils. They can improve their local soils, either by trying to produce compost locally or bring compost from as close as possible. You know, try to reduce transportation times, reduce kind of the other resources that are needed to produce the compost, substitute synthetic fertilizers as much as possible. So that's why we look into the sustainability part of it. Also, when you're adding compost and you're improving soils, you increase the water holding capacity of your soil. So that eventually reduces irrigation needed. So that's the sustainable practices. Compost also has been proven to also suppress plant diseases. The Ohio State University has done a lot of research on this. So if you add compost to soils, you might help prevent some diseases. Even when raising dairy and farms, it has been proven that using compost as bedding, as part of the bedding, reduces incidence of mastitis, so dairy cows are healthier. And so there are many ways that we can include these in different aspects of, aspects of agriculture.
Do you feel that the need for people wanting perfect food, for the food that goes into the grocery store, the fruits and veggies have to look perfect? Is that a major part of the problem? Do you think requirements in grocery stores are too strict and people should just be okay with imperfect veggies?
Personally, yes, but I do understand why people have that tendency to look for perfect food, because we have been conditioned like that for many years. Mm-hmm. And we sometimes associate, even assume that some of these fruit, they all grow the same way in the tree. I mean, you look, see these perfect apples, and if you had never been to an orchard or growing that area, you might think that all apples grow like that beautifully, as you see this grocery store, but that is not the truth. There's a lot of variations, even from factors, you know, fruits grow, grow at different rates. Even the how much sun they get at certain times might make the fruit ripen in a different speed, but even part of it, or, you know, they grow like rings and branch, so they have like an indentation. Mm-hmm. But those are still, those foods are still perfectly fine to eat.
Yeah.
A problem sometimes emerge because people assume that if they're not perfect or they're of life, they do not look perfect, their quality is less. But for example, you know, that's what I love what Misfits Market does, because they're demonstrating now this food is completely fine. It just looks different because that's how nature is, and we should be fine with that.
I joked around with the marketing director for Misfits Market that if you do your job really well at the Ohio EPA and you really help with food waste prevention and figure out a way to stop so much food waste, that you'll put her out of business. But she said that's not the case. There's always going to be excess food. Yeah.
No, because actually one of the ways to, and that's what we wanted to do with this kind of food rescue, is actually prevent food waste by moving all these kind of products their way. You know, that's what we want. We need more organizations and companies like Misfit Markets, so they help us prevent food waste.
And
they might put us out of...
they'll do too good of a job using the food waste. I see what you mean. Yeah.
Oh, no, they I'll be fine if I have a less job. That would be my...
Yes. But I also...
life achievement. Putting myself out of a job if we can avoid all food waste.
Well, that, yeah, that sounds wonderful. And I also like the idea of calling it food rescue rather than food waste, too. But just as a final question, we have about a minute left. But if you is there more that the state and local governments can do to get involved? I'm sure that something like the Ohio EPA, you're probably like, oh, I could always use more money, right?
The local initiatives certainly use more money. Especially groups like the Transformation Kitchens can use more money to save or hold some of this excess food before they can use it. Food pantries and even food banks, sometimes they receive a truckload of some food, and that is a lot, and they don't have enough time to distribute before it kind of starts to go bad. And if they don't have enough refrigeration or other means to keep it, then that might end up resulting in food waste, which is what we don't want in the beginning. So yeah, my initial conversation with these groups, having that infrastructure for like regional safekeeping of food and redistribution, that is very important. That we need funding for that. Unfortunately, it's not funding that Ohio EPA might have, or maybe a lot, but that's why part of our initiative for planning is that we want to address part of that is what ideas we can come up with, what can we learn from someone, come up with innovative ideas that we can provide that infrastructure, those services to help prevent food waste at the end.
That was Angel Arroyo Rodriguez. He leads programs for organics recycling and environmental planning at the Ohio EPA. Thank you so much for your time today.
You're most welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
And coming up, we're going to talk with the Mid-Ohio Food Collective about the intersection of food waste and food insecurity. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. 11.5% of people in Ohio struggle with hunger. And despite the growing rates of hunger, food waste still exists. A company called Misfits Market is selling this extra produce from farmers as a cheaper alternative. But are they able to take on all the burden of an estimated 92 billion pounds of extra produce? That's where food banks come in. We're here today with the CEO of the Mid-Ohio Food Collective, Matt Habash. Welcome to All Sides, Matt.
Thanks, Amy.
So, Matt, can you give us a rundown of the state of hunger right now in Ohio, and particularly, I guess, in central Ohio?
Unfortunately, it's worse now than it ever was. The numbers, you know, we're up about 45% over where we were at the peak of COVID, up 100% since 2018. So we're seeing an ever-increasing number of people coming to get help. You know, it's not surprising given, you know, all the factors. They tell me that it hasn't been since the Reagan administration where you had high inflation, high interest rates at the same time. You got, you know, food costs. We all see that. Everybody was enamored with the price of eggs these days. But, you know, the reality is people are struggling. Housing leads the reasons, you know, for why they're struggling. But we're seeing more people now. And that's true not only here in central Ohio, but across Ohio, across the state, actually. But just as equally as bad in a lot of our rural communities. We serve 20 counties totally. So a lot of those rural counties have a lot of folks struggling as well.
Now, during this hour, we're talking about food waste. And mm-hmm. most people don't automatically connect food waste to food insecurity, but they are related. How are they related?
Well, I mean, they're actually been related, you know, and I think throughout all the food waste conversations, we forget that, you know, what food banks have been doing since the 1970s, which was really, you know, started with one man, John Van Hengel, out in Phoenix, Arizona, collecting more food than he could use at the soup kitchen that he was, you know, volunteering at, and found a warehouse, started collecting that food and redistributing it to other charities in the Phoenix area. That's now grown to the largest private sector feeding program in the United States, Feeding America. Some people may know it in the old days of Second Harvest, but it really was, you know, that work was really about reclaiming the food industry surplus and trying to redistribute that. Somewhere around 2010, we led the national effort to get the next billion pounds of produce. There was a big shift in the 2000 to 2010 area where, you know, food waste shifted, you know, a lot from dry packaged goods, you know, as companies got more effective and efficient, just in time, you know, computers, you know, data analysis, you know, knowing where all your food was, you know, reduced a lot of the food waste in the dry package industry. But produce was really just really for food banks was just being discovered as a huge source of food.
Now, earlier in the show, we were talking about food waste specifically from farms. And in mm-hmm. fact, there's a company called Misfits Market that sells food from farms that would otherwise go to waste. Does your organization have a similar relationship with farms? Are you able to get food that would otherwise the farmers would have to throw away?
It's absolutely the backbone of what we do today. I mean, we shifted, you know, we did diabetes research in 2011 to 2013 with Ohio State and Bristol Myers Squibb Foundation, looking at the issue of food insecurity and managing your diabetes. And we discovered very quickly that people don't have access to the right diabetic friendly foods, particularly fresh food. And so we shifted, you know, what we were doing then to starting to collect more fresh food. We led the national effort to find the next 1 billion pounds of produce from Columbus. in a three-day-long process, bringing everybody in the industry together. But it really is, at the end of it, farmers, there's a tremendous amount of produce that's grown in the United States that's either harvested or harvested and not sold, depending on circumstances. There's a plenty of produce. There's not a market in the United States for grade B produce. You know, so organizations like Misfits, Imperfect Produce, a number of folks have started trying to, you know, take produce that is perfectly good, that, you know, either isn't produced in surplus because of perfect conditions, or they couldn't sell it for whatever reason, and trying to reclaim that. So food banks have gotten very heavy into, and, you know, today we're 65% fresh food, and probably 40% of that's produce.
Now, do you also, the idea of where Misfit Market came from is that some of these fruits and veggies don't look pretty enough to go into a grocery store. Do you at the Mid-Ohio Food Collective, do you care if they're pretty as long as they're edible?
No, I've done it. We've done a lot of, actually, this, you know, for a lot of this, this started in Europe, France in particular. There's a video out called Ugly Fruit, ugly spelled with an I. And it really was a great marketing campaign, put all these ugly looking misshapen fruits together against a white background, and showed people, you know, and then made smoothies and soups and sold it in grocery stores, and then eventually had grade B produce, ugly fruit, you know, misshapen fruit. In the stores, and couldn't keep in the stores. It's 30% cheaper than grade A, and people realize, hey, this doesn't make any difference. You know, we've talked through, you know, a number of administrations over the year that, you know, we judge the quality of produce in America by pretty. You know, I used to say appearance over substance. That's an indictment of America in general. But, you know, but the reality of it is, it's because it was, the broccoli head got a little too big. You know, the plum's now the size of a nectarine. They can't sell it as grade A because it doesn't meet the size standard. There's nothing wrong with that product. You know, clearly, we all had that perfect image of the red apple in the past. And so when they don't look like that, or the peaches get a blemish because, you know, they got hit by a hailstorm late in the season before they harvested, you know, there's nothing wrong with that food. It's perfectly good food. And if we can educate people that this food is perfectly good, I think we can have a healthier America by figuring out strategies like Misfits, Imperfect, food banks, anybody else starting to sell this product, you know, that people realize it's perfectly good and edible. And hopefully less expensive, and create another market for the farmers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I was getting at. That was my next question. Do the farms donate to you, or do you need to buy it from them?
We do a combination of things. We realized we were getting it all donated in the early days, and then you realize that the farmers can't afford it. You know, keep the workers on for free, picking up the product, getting it out of the fields, all of those kind of things. So, you know, in our world in the early days, and then, you know, early 2000s, you know, we called it value-added processing, VAP, you know, but it really was pay the picking and the packing costs of getting that part. So the farmer gets something out of the deal. The workers get an extra day's wage out of the deal, but we're not paying market rate. And so for us, you know, we've been anywhere from free to 36 cents a pound is that probably the high end of the produce. And, you know, we helped to create a mixing center in Indianapolis so that we could bring a lot of food into that central hub. They had a nice warehouse over there. And then the small food banks could benefit because they couldn't take semis a product the way we can. And so we're trying to come up with all those strategies to really help the farmers get the food out of the fields and get it into people. In some cases, it's as fresh or fresher than you'll get in a grocery store because it's coming straight from the farms to us and out to a produce distribution or a pantry or somebody within 2 days.
Now, Misfits Market partners with food banks. They donate some food as well. But do you feel like companies like that, you know, the Misfit Markets of the world, do they take away an opportunity for food banks to be able to have the food? Or is there enough to go around where you can get plenty and a company like a for-profit company can exist?
Absolutely. I think there's room for both. I mean, some of my brethren may disagree with me on that thing, but I think there's so much product right now that's available that, you know, my goal is to get it, you know, at the end of the day, my goal is that we have a healthy impact on people. You know, it isn't just about emergency feeding. So the more opportunities people have, you know, to buy food at the grocery store, to buy food, you know, my sister called me from Seattle once and said, you know, Imperfect Produce had this box of, you know, two different kinds, organic, non-organic, had no idea what she was going to get. It was a CSA, you know, and I said, do it. You know, by all means, support them, help them get that going, because I think the more opportunities like that for people to realize we got a lot of fresh food, you know, in America. Food insecurity is, I say all the time, has nothing to do with food at the end of the day. It has to do with the resources to be able to buy the food. you know, and if you don't have the resources because you're paying all your other bills, then, you know, you're not going to buy fresh food, you know, that kind of thing, because you don't have it. Or we all have a crisper of good intentions in our refrigerator. They have great intentions, and sometimes they go awry, and we don't use the food. You know, but I think there's plenty of opportunity. There's so much product available, and no farmer I've ever met wants to see their food not go to good use.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm Amy Jurevich. We're talking about food waste solutions with Matt Habash, CEO of the Mid-Ohio Food Collective. One of the main partnerships of the Mid-Ohio Food Collective is Kroger. You have the Zero Waste, Zero Hunger program. How much food actually comes from this program?
Oh, it's millions of pounds across the country. I mean, one of the things you realize, it isn't all just in farms. You know, a lot of the produce that's available, and, you know, and I think as the grocery industry's gone to, you know, much higher, you know, standards in their grocery stores, they pull a lot of their produce early, you know, and they're getting it off the shelves, you know, so that they can maintain the high standards. You've seen a big shift over the last 20 years and the appearance of fresh food in grocery stores. You walk into most grocery stores and you're walking right into their produce section, you know, that kind of thing. And it really is about that appearance. So there's a tremendous amount of food that Kroger and a number of other retailers, we've had this, we call it retail store pickup in our world. You know, it's, and we've even gone to what we call an enabling program, linking our pantries that are close to the store to pick it up instead of us picking it up, taking it back to the warehouse and getting it back out 2 days later, you know, that kind of thing, that we can have that produce in people's hands that much quicker. So as the stores pull it, the agency partner or we, depending on the circumstance, will pick it up and then get it into people's hands as quickly as possible. But it's perfectly good produce. In the early days when I started in the 80s, you know, a lot of that produce was squishy, you know, cucumbers and, you know, squishy tomatoes. A lot of product was not, it was on its last legs. But today, you know, I think we're seeing a lot of that product that's still really good. And it's going right into local communities from their local grocery store. What better thing to do?
Now, do we need to worry about all of this food waste? I mean, are you able to distribute it all? Is there too much food for people to be able to consume it? Are we overproducing, I guess, is my question.
No. I think at the end of the day, there's, you know, given the hunger needs in the community, you know, and the challenges that we have across, you know, not only this community, but across the United States, more strategies we can come up with to link people to good, fresh, healthy food. You know, I think, A, the people win at the end of the day. They're getting access to something they may not buy in the grocery store because of its perishable nature and their limited resources and the cost of it. You know, so I think there's a great opportunity to tap this, you know, the tremendous amount of surplus product and get it into people's hands, you know, as quickly as possible. In some cases, helping them figure out what to do with it or chop it or cook it or whatever. None of us go home every night and make a meal from scratch. We all have options. You know, so I get a little concerned that we, you know, don't overburden people that have real high need and but at the same time have a lot of pressure on them to think they can go home and do that every single night. So we're looking for ways to cook some of this food, to chop it, all the things we do in a grocery store now. You know, we don't buy lettuce, we chop our own lettuce. You know, we got all kinds of vegetables that are pre-packed for us. How do we do that same thing for people at the end of the day? So there's a tremendous need. And I think the other, we got to remember at the end of the day, we can have a healthier community if we got people regular access to good, fresh, healthy food.
Do you think that the government is doing enough state and federal level to support food insecurity or help with the food waste issue?
I think we got a lot of way to go. You know, I think we're failing. You know, right now there seems to be a struggle and a war on poor people. I don't know why they're that. You know, healthcare matters, food matters. Why not connect the two? We, years ago, when Senator Brown was there and when he was on the Ag Committee, pitched him that, you know, the SNAP program not only was a, you know, a program that, that provided a lot of food, but it was also a high quality health care program. You know, it was a way to get people regular access. And so to revisit SNAP as, you know, as public health rather than an entitlement we all want to hate and cut. And so I'm really, you know, arguing that, hey, getting people regular access to fresh, healthy food may lower our Medicaid, Medicare costs at the end of the day, you know, from a government perspective, but for everybody, It's really possible. You know, we've spent a lot of time over the last several years building a food as medicine strategy, you know, and really getting healthcare to understand the value of fresh food. I used to chair Mount Carmel's board a number of years ago, and really when the ACA came in, and it was really around food started to be recognized that if you get discharged and nobody there to cook for you, regardless of whether you had money, this all predates online ordering, delivery, all the things we've had since the pandemic. You know, but at the end of the day, we forget, we take food for granted in America. And I think we got a unique opportunity, you know, to really think differently about the food, partner with these great, you know, growers and folks that we have in America, and make sure that nobody goes hungry in America.
Now, the Mid-Ohio Food Collective just announced there will be a new food hub and a healthcare facility. Will this increase the amount of food you need to maintain that facility?
It does. Ultimately, at the end of the day, what we're really after is having hub type of locations. You know, we have the opportunity to take a former grocery store and turn it into a multi-purpose facility in an extremely high need area for, you know, people locally. It's the old Eastland Mall area. So, you know, it's called the Eastland Prosperity Center. More than half that space is going to be partner space. You know, to have a high estate in there with full healthcare in there, with WIC right next to them, Celebrate One, the city's Pride Center, Jewish Family Services doing, you know, workforce development. We have a number of folks, in addition to a Mid-Ohio market with fresh food, and we're even going to put a production kitchen in there to cook some of the food. To be, you know, most of those people in that 3-2 zip code from Eastland are driving clear to Grove City to get food at our market on Gantz Road. That is a long drive. We don't want people burning gas. We want them to stay in their own communities. And then hopefully that community rallies around that kind of location and it really becomes a hub for a lot of positive strength building for that community. So those Mid-Ohio market strategy is really around creating, you know, not only good food distribution, but the wraparound services that hopefully go upstream and address some of the root causes as to why people are presenting to get free food.
That was Matt Habash, CEO of the Mid-Ohio Food Collective. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Amy.
And this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.